President Trump is calling for a new approach to childhood vaccines. What are the implications of his executive order? This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to talk about the president's proposal and what it means for doctors, patients, and parents are Hamilton County Public Health Medical Director, Dr. Steve Fagans. Welcome back, Dr. Fagans.
Thank you, ma'am.
And TriHealth Pediatric Medical Director and System Chief of Pediatrics, Dr. Joe Bailey. Thanks for being here, Dr. Bailey.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Dr. Bailey, President Trump signed this executive order last week. It recommends splitting the combined vaccine for measles, mumps, and rubella into separate shots. Can you explain what the recommendation has been for when children should get this MMR shot and how many doses they should get?
Yeah, the standard recommendation for the MMR has been two doses. The first dose is given between 12 and 15 months of age. That's the primary vaccine. And then the second or booster dose is given usually between 4 and 6 years of age. And what the second dose basically boosts those patients whose immune system did not have a full response to the first dose.
And Dr. Bailey, the president during his news conference suggested that the MMR shot could be lethal. Are you aware of any children who have died from getting these vaccines?
Absolutely not in my practice. Now, there have been reports of serious events with MMR, as there are with a number of vaccines. But that's very different than demonstrating that the vaccine caused the death. The MMR has been used for decades, and it's got a very strong safety record. We've been using it for many years, serious reactions are very rare. However, as with any vaccine and really any medication, severe allergic reactions are always possible. But for a healthy child, the risk of serious harm from the MMR is really very extraordinarily low. And then not to mention the diseases that we're vaccinated against are much more likely to cause a serious illness than the vaccine itself is.
What are the potential side effects from these shots, Dr. Bailey?
The most common we see are a fever and rash. That typically happens in the 5 to 7 day range after the vaccine. You can get swollen glands. Those are the most common by far.
Okay. Well, Dr. Bailey just mentioned the diseases that this shot is designed to protect children from, and one of them, of course, is measles. How contagious is measles, and how serious can it be for children who get infected, Dr. Fagans?
Yeah, it's actually the most contagious virus that we have, and some people will say that one person can infect 15 people. Who's unvaccinated can walk into a room within 2 hours of what someone there has been with measles and get measles. It is the most contagious. And just to kind of reiterate what Dr. Bailey was talking about, the first measles vaccine was first approved in 1963. It was actually 1971 when the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine was combined and has been combined ever since, in large part because of access. If you divide them out, that's more people getting off work and things like that. And that was one of the public health, like, top 10 achievements is not just that vaccine, but vaccines in general, but specifically the measles, mumps, and rubella. Before the measles vaccine was in wide use, measles led to 48,000 cases of hospitalization a year in the U.S., 1,000 cases of encephalitis, and about 500 deaths.
Wow. And Dr. Fagans, the U.S. has seen measles outbreaks in recent years. Are we seeing measles in Ohio and Kentucky?
So as the U.S., we are probably on track to lose our endemic status or gain endemic status here this fall. Ohio has been somewhat spared. There have been 3 outbreaks with 15 total cases. Most recently up in Northeast Ohio, Ashtabula, there was an exposure there at a stable, a horse stable. So 4 cases from that, 7 cases in Franklin County in February, and 3 cases from Cuyahoga County in January.
Mm. You know, you were talking about years ago before this vaccine, there were hundreds of people each year died from measles. Isn't there a case where a child can survive measles, but in some rare cases they can die years later from a condition that results from measles? Are you familiar with that, Dr. Fagans?
Well, I'm sure Dr. Bailey can mention that for sure. But measles has this unusual property that it's almost you lose your immune system after measles for some, maybe a year, maybe longer. There are certainly long-term sequela from any childhood infection, polio, measles, you name it. And encephalopathy or encephalitis, inflammation of the brain, is really a big deal. And Dr. Bailey can probably speak more about this sort of immune memory issue that's related in the post-measles case. There's an entire generation of physicians, possibly two, who've never seen measles.
Mm. Dr. Bailey, have you ever seen a case of measles?
I have not.
Well,
I trained in the early 90s and have not had a case of measles myself.
Hmm. Well, we're talking about President Trump's proposal to change the nation's approach to childhood vaccines. Do you have questions or comments? Call 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Dr. Fagans, you were talking about how there have been some cases of measles in Ohio. What's happening? Why are we seeing more cases of measles in the U.S. generally? Hadn't it basically been eradicated?
Yes, in the year 2000, the U.S. was determined to not have domestically transmitted measles. Any measles that you would see would be essentially brought in from a different country. And it really relates to the vaccine rate. So there is no treatment. Some people will say vitamin A. That's when there's a vitamin A deficiency in certain parts of the world. There's no treatment. You treat the fever, you treat the secondary infection. The vaccine, two doses, provide lifelong immunity, 93% protection the first dose, 97% the second dose, for life. Many people, when they go in the health professions, will get a third dose or whatever, just in case. But that's an amazing statistic, lifelong immunity. And that's really why you've got two physicians on who've some tenure, who have not, I've seen it as a military physician in foreign countries, but nonetheless have not seen it anywhere here locally.
Hmm. Just because of how effective those vaccines have been for decades now. Dr. Bailey, I want to talk about another vaccine. Babies get a hepatitis B vaccine within 24 hours of birth. Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has raised questions about the need for that. Can you explain the reason behind babies getting that vaccine?
With the hepatitis B, not every baby is going to be at risk for hepatitis B, but if every year, and I don't have the number off the top of my head, but every year prior to hepatitis B vaccination, thousands of babies would contract hepatitis B. And if we can prevent that, because then the problem with hepatitis B is that can lead later on in life to problems with the liver cancer, and long-term chronic issues. And if we can get an immune response early on, we can protect the baby from a very young age from a potential problem that affects tens of thousands of babies a year. So the reason is it's very effective, but it's also a very benign vaccine. That is probably one of the most benign, if not the most benign vaccine that we use.
Can you talk more about that? Because I know President Trump has also kind of targeted that hepatitis B vaccine in the past. I'm wondering if that's caused confusion or hesitation among new parents. You say it's a very benign vaccine. Tell me more about that.
Well, as far as side effects goes with the hepatitis B vaccine, it's given to newborns, and we'll do it at the 1 month, and we'll do it at the 6 to 9 month visit, and it's a series of three vaccines, and virtually no side effects. Yes, you can see sore legs or sore arm, depending on where you get it, but as far as we typically do not see fever. We typically do not see any other side effects. So from that standpoint, but I think the issue is what you said earlier is that we the reason I think it has been brought up is because parents parents are smart. They know, hey, I don't have hepatitis B. My the mom says, and dad says, well, I don't have hepatitis B. So then why would my child have hepatitis B? And I think that's where the question comes from. But as not to go too deep, but part of, vaccines and giving vaccines takes care of not only the individual, but also we take care of a population. And it's my job to do both. And sometimes it's a tightrope. But part of this is taking care of a population's health. And I think this is part of that.
Dr. Feggins, do you want to weigh in on that?
You know, Dr. Bailey really, really pointed out exactly what public health is. And so going from a targeted approach, like, well, you might have it, we'll give the vaccine, to a universal vaccination strategy relatively soon after birth, essentially took back hepatitis B off the table as a very, very serious childhood illness that has serious implications later. And so that's really the public health approach, the universal strategy. No questions. Let's just take care of it. And who knows? You might go into healthcare. You might go into some other profession for which you still need that hepatitis vaccine.
Mm. And if you get it early on like that, if you go into healthcare, are you covered for life with that too, Dr. Fagan?
Yeah. So everybody gets a little tighter and they may get a booster.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. Well, we are going to continue this conversation after a short break, and later in the program, what your home address can tell you about your child's risk of hospitalization. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're back with our conversation about President Trump's executive order related to childhood vaccines. My guests are Hamilton County Public Health Medical Director, Dr. Steve Feggins, and TriHealth Pediatric Medical Director and System Chief of Pediatrics, Dr. Joe Bailey. You can join the conversation. Call 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. So, Dr. Bailey, before the break, we were talking about the hepatitis B vaccine that children get right after birth, within 24 hours of birth. And you were talking about how some parents are saying, well, wait, if I don't have it, if my wife doesn't have it, they're raising questions. I guess I'm wondering more broadly, do you have patients whose parents are just wary of getting them vaccinated? What concerns are you hearing about childhood vaccines in general?
Oh, well, bottom line is parents have lots of different concerns, especially, I'd say, in recent years. But this is nothing new to pediatrics, but I spend much of my day talking about these concerns. Some worry about side effects. Some worry their child is getting too many vaccines at once. Some are worried about various ingredients of the vaccines. And some parents are concerned, well, why am I giving a vaccine for something that's not even around anymore? Well, remember, the diseases are still around. We're just not seeing them, and that needs to be driven home. And I'll say maybe the biggest, or maybe the one of the more common ones that I think is that a lot of parents have lost trust in medical and government institutions, and in my opinion, for good reason over years past. And so it's time that we reestablish that trust with our patients and our parents. So these concerns, they need to be taken seriously. I mean, I'm charged with taking care of a parent's most prized possession. And it's my job to listen to them. It's my job to answer their question as honestly and transparently as I can, and explain both the benefits and the risk. And sometimes that risk involves death. And it's difficult to talk about, but it's one of those topics that you need to lay it all on the table so that parents can make the best decision about vaccination for their child.
So, Dr. Bailey, what does it take to rebuild that trust? I mean, you mentioned that some parents have just lost that trust. What does it take? And also, when you're talking about the risk of death, what are you talking about there? Are you talking about these diseases, or are you talking about the vaccines? What are you talking about?
No, I'm not talking about the vaccines. I'm talking about the diseases. Whether it be whooping cough, we still see whooping cough. It's not uncommon in the Cincinnati, the Ohio River Valley is one of the hotbeds in the United States for whooping cough. And we don't talk about measles. I mean, the fact that the measles vaccination rate has fallen, and then we're starting to see measles reappear. That's just more proof. So it's it's the risk of not getting the vaccines that needs to be talked about.
Dr. Bailey, if parents want to follow the president's suggestion and get separate vaccinations to protect against each of these diseases, the measles, mumps, and rubella that we were talking about earlier, is that even possible to break it up?
Right now in the United States, we don't have any licensed what we call single antigen measles, mumps, and rubella. We don't have the ability to purchase single measles, single mumps, single rubella vaccines, presently. We only have the MMR and then in the MMRV, which includes the chickenpox. So it's not like you can just walk in your pediatrician today and say, hey, I want mine separated. The bottom line is the companies would need to relicense. I don't know the details on how that would work, and Dr. Fagans may know the answer to that, but they're going to need to be relicensed and remarketed and reproduced in the medical industry. And one other thing I want to go back to, you had asked how we rebuild that trust with parents. I didn't really answer that question. And do we rebuild that trust by being transparent? We rebuild the trust by looking into and doing research and ask I think we need to ask the hard questions. Is what we're doing the best way? And it's okay to ask these questions. Executive order, the good thing about this is it's going to provide a framework that we can reinitiate research into what is the best way. Is there a better way? Or the answer might be, hey, we're already doing it the best way, and we're going to stick with what we're doing. But I think as scientists, because even as a pediatrician, I'm still a scientist, and as a scientist, we got to ask ourselves, is the data that we have is still the best data? Is there something better out there? Is there, are there new studies to be done? So those are things that we need to ask ourselves and things that we need to do. And I think it's our duty as healthcare providers on all levels, to ask ourselves that question periodically, because you don't want to be stuck in the past. We want to make sure we're doing the best we can for our patients every step along the way.
Dr. Fagans, what do you think about that idea of continual research and figuring out, are we doing it the best way? And who, if that's that approach makes sense, who should be doing that research?
Yeah, so Dr. Bailey really brought that up. We got somewhat complacent about vaccines because they work so well. It was just a check mark. Oh, yeah, get your vaccine. We also got busy. We don't have time to answer all those questions like we used to.
Scientific questions.
Not just in the exam room. We have so many things we need to check. Go ahead and get your vaccine. And so even in public health, it really has not been about why you should get the vaccine. It's how and where. To this day, the much larger issue related to vaccine is access. Getting off work, getting to a pediatrician. A pharmacist can vaccinate down to age 5, but not before that. And so getting into your pediatrician and getting all those things, and it can be a complex schedule, as Dr. Bailey mentioned. And so it really does just get back to the basics and really, work to answer those questions. And research continues all the time. We really couldn't ethically go back to where we were. We need to move forward, and we wouldn't be able to do a placebo control study of a vaccine that works so well. Mm-hmm. And so, but answering the question, being transparent, really having the conversation, and when we talk about trust, I don't know a single parent that doesn't want the best for their kid, for their child. I don't know a single physician or advanced practice clinician that doesn't want the best for their patient. And so sometimes we forget we're both coming from a place of wanting to do the best.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We have a caller on the line. Hi, Greg. Thanks so much for calling. What's your question or comment?
Hi. I'm 63. Back in grade school, I got the Star Trek laser thing on my shoulder. It gave me a little starburst. Was that the MMR?
Okay, let's ask our experts. Do you know, Dr. Fagans?
Yeah, that was most likely smallpox.
Okay.
And thanks to vaccination, smallpox has been eliminated from the earth.
Wow. Okay. Well, Greg, there you go. Thanks so much. I hope that answers your question. I want to come back to you, Dr. Bailey. We were talking about how the president wants to break this three-strain vaccine, this MMR vaccine, into three separate shots. Is there any evidence to suggest that breaking up the vaccine into three shots would be safer or more effective or would be tolerated better by children? Have you seen any research on that, Dr. Bailey?
No, I have not. There's not any evidence to my knowledge that shows that separating the MMR into its three components makes it any safer or more effective. There is a downside right off the bat, and that is that it creates more opportunity. If I say to a mom, "Hey, I'm going to give you your measles today. You come back in a month or 2 months, whatever it is, and get your mumps." Well, there's a greater chance that appointment gets forgotten, or something comes up and it gets pushed off, and then it gets forgotten again, and then all of a sudden we're creating more opportunities for patients to. For patients to be incompletely vaccinated. So it's absolutely reasonable to study the question. And I think we should study the question. We don't have an answer for autism yet. We don't have a great answer for that. And that doesn't mean that, and like I said, there's no studies that say it's linked to vaccines, but there's no reason that we can't find out if the MMR more effective, you know, separately than it is together. I don't know the answer to that, but I think, as I said, you know, in relative to the previous question, was I think we need to continue that research and find the studies and find out the answers so we can put some of those questions to rest.
Dr. Fagan?
So, you know, there's a famous article published 25 years ago in The Lancet linking the measles vaccine, specifically MMR, to autism. That study's been debunked. That study was falsely done and actually was authored by an individual who had a patent on a single dose measles vaccine. Mm. And so had a conflict of interest as well. And so, you know, that began or maybe continued the question into cause and effect related to either vaccines and autism. And Dr. Bay is exactly right, because we don't have, and there's probably a multiple genetic and otherwise causes, and maybe we don't know a cause of autism, and we try to answer that question as best we can, and sometimes that adds more to the confusion than to the enlightenment. Hmm.
Dr. Fagans, what about natural immunity? I mean, when I was a kid, before there was a chickenpox vaccine, I know some families would make sure once one kid got chickenpox, put them all together and make them all get chickenpox, get it all over with. What is the role of natural immunity in,
you know,
all this?
And that's a great, so it, everything in medicine is a benefit to risk ratio. And so if you look at a vaccine benefit to risk, let's say measles, mumps, rubella, the benefit is tremendous, lifelong immunity. The risk is very minimal, if like one in several million, okay? Let's go to a varicella party and
varicella's chickenpox, right?
Chickenpox party. And so, yeah, you get chickenpox, but somebody might get encephalitis for life. Somebody might get one of the really significant complications of that same illness for life, when in fact, the risk to benefit is much greater with natural exposure, if you will, than with exposure based on long-standing vaccines. Hmm.
You mentioned this before, Dr. Fagans, but there's been a lot of talk about vitamin A. Can that provide immunity from measles? What's all that talk about?
Yeah, so vitamin A studied, measles is still endemic in many countries. And so in areas where there is a true vitamin A deficiency, you know, if you got nothing, you'll try something. And so vitamin A is used. Even in this country, if you're admitted with measles, you know, you might get vitamin A just in case that it might help. But that's really all we have. We do not have an antiviral for measles.
Hmm. Okay. We have another caller on the line. Hi, Evan. Thanks for calling. What's your question?
Yes. They're saying that there's no proof that vaccines cause autism. The question would be, have they looked at the ratio of autism in the general American population versus the rate of autism in the Amish community that rarely vaccinates their children, because that would show a difference in how vaccines work and autism rates.
Interesting. Thanks, Evan. Dr. Fagans, are you familiar?
Yeah, there have been large studies, and I know that's been brought out in looking at the Amish community. And so part of it is a diagnostic bias okay, related to healthcare. Very large population studies in a number of countries comparing the rate of autism in individuals vaccinated, individuals not, have not seen a difference.
Okay. Well, thanks for that question, Evan. We sure appreciate it. Dr. Bailey, do children's bodies handle multiple vaccines all at once? How do they do with that typically?
Yeah, they handle it very well. A healthy child's immune system is capable of responding to multiple vaccines at the same time. We've been doing this for decades, and studies have shown that giving multiple vaccines at the same visit does not cause chronic health problems or overwhelm the immune system. And then the flip side is there's also practical advantages, and that is it goes back to what I said before. There's fewer visits. There's less opportunity to forget about or fall behind on a child's vaccines.
Dr. Bailey, will this executive order affect which vaccines are covered by insurance?
My understanding that it will not is that any vaccines that are included in any of the categories that were stipulated in the executive order by the CDC and ACIP schedule will continue to be covered.
Dr. Higgins, we talked about this a little bit earlier in terms of public health and the role that plays in these vaccine schedules, but how important is the country's childhood vaccine schedule, not only for the children who get the shots, but for everybody?
Well, that's the so-called, community immunity. There are children that can't get a vaccine for whatever reason, immunodeficiency, or don't. And so measles is a great example. The 1 to 15, you invert that, that's that 95% of a community be vaccinated to make sure that you don't propagate, that you don't spread the measles. In terms of an executive order, which we saw last week, the 10 diseases that you vaccinate for school have not changed. That's Ohio revised code. There are exceptions that you can get and you fill out and whatnot. And the overwhelming majority of parents choose to vaccinate their children.
Okay. Well, I have been talking with Hamilton County Public Health Medical Director, Dr. Steve Feggins, and TriHealth Pediatric Medical Director and System Chief of Pediatrics, Dr. Joe Bailey. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Up next, what your home address can tell you about your child's risk of hospitalization. This is Cincinnati Edition.